week five, primetime props. Football season, it sneaks up on you, and then it's already week five, and you don't know what happened. I'm Jeff Edelstein. You can find me. I'm covering the business of gambling over at InGame. And here are all my props buddies, props.com buddies, Justin Bales, Keith Eister. And let me introduce, for the very first time, Mr. Justin Carlucci. Congratulations on getting the Mr. now that you're married. Is that how it works? You're not a Mr. until you get married? I don't know.
Something like that. I feel old now, I suppose. But it was the same night that James Franklin refused to win another big game. So, unfortunately, some of those in attendance of my big day in Pennsylvania will also remember that it was just another notch on the belt with James Franklin, who will just never, he'll never get it done. Same song and dance. So it is what it is. All jokes aside, had an awesome weekend. Appreciate you guys holding it down and ready to rock here for week five.
Let's do it. All right, let's talk. Where are we? We're in London this week. I can't keep track of what. I think we were in Dublin last week. Now I think we're back in London for the Vikings and the Browns. I don't think I'm going to wake up to watch this game. The Vikings are 3.5-point favorites. I know, Luch, you started your research early. You like a couple things of this game, yeah?
Yeah. Boy, first of all, did the NFL do Minnesota dirty? I don't recall personally the last time a team back-to-backed it in different countries.
Never, never. They must have to agree to it, right?
Who would want to agree to it, though? I mean,
money, maybe? I don't know.
I suppose. I mean, they got the shaft. That sucks. And Vegas thinks the thing's going to be really ugly. The game total is bet down to, what do we got, like 36.5, I believe. These are two running backs in this game who I love, generally speaking, and they both, got thrusted into large roles with Aaron Jones going down for Minnesota. And everyone's still kind of holding their collective breaths a little bit with Quinshon Judkins. I mean, at this point, I don't think the NFL dropped the other shoe and just say, you know what, we're going to suspend you for 5 or 6 games. Then again, what the hell do I know? That being said, this is a really tough matchup on both sides. It's going to be ugly. I love Judkins. I love the role he's in. I was thrilled to see him being utilized as a pass catcher last week. Played almost 60% of the snaps, exactly what you wanted to see. It's a tough matchup, though. Minnesota, is pretty good defensively. The travel, everything. It's going to be a sloppy game. I am kind of leaning Judkins under rushing yards, which pains me because I love the talent and I have a lot of shares across the industry.
Too high number.
It's pretty high. And the same thing with Jordan Mason. We know the volume's going to be there. I got under 67.5 earlier today. The Browns are still kind of putting on a historic show defensively, according to fantasy points. 0.51 yards before contact, before attempt. I mean, they are just hitting people in the backfield time after time after time. So I have no doubts that Mason will probably see, 12 to, I don't know, let's say 17 or 18 carries or something like that, and probably somewhere in the middle. But tough matchup. I think this game's going to suck. I might sleep in for this one or watch a little EPL or something instead myself.
Bales, you were shaking your head like someone was offering you mayonnaise on a steak. What are you shaking your head at over there?
Yeah, I'm shaking my head at the under on Judkins. I think, for me personally, if you're not playing the over, which I am, stay away. Judkins is taking over the backfield completely. Judkins is a very, very good running back, forcing a ton of missed tackles, can get the yards after the contact. I think there's two keys here, two major factors as to why I prefer Judkins over. Number one, if you're going to attack Minnesota, the easiest way to do that's on the ground. I think that when you have someone like Judkins, that makes the most sense. Two, you're starting Dylan Gabriel. He was set at 72.5 earlier this week. I don't know what he's at now. That's what I played. You don't need to be this ultra efficient type of runner if you're getting a ton of carries. I don't think that they're just going to go out here and let Dylan Gabriel throw the ball 40 times. I think that they're going to play it relatively safe. And I think that this is obviously a very bad spot for Minnesota, where they're playing their second game overseas in a row. I don't know. Game stays close, and I think there's just going to be so much volume. And you can convince me on a back that I don't think is that good that, they'll stay under on volume. But Judkins, he's going to create yards himself. And you also have Minnesota, obviously dealing with a few injuries there that are going to really deplete their run defense. So I don't know. For me personally, I just think this is a game where Cleveland's going to hand that ball to him, you know, 18, 20 times. And if that's the case, you don't need 5 yards carry to hit this kind of low number.
All right, we're fighting. We're dueling already. I have to bet.
This is like the first time on this podcast where I came in and you were like Judkins, and I was like, okay. And then you were like under, and I was like, wait a minute.
I love Judkins. I'm going to pass it over to Keith, but before I forget, and I have a lot of Judkins. Like, as soon as everything looked pretty bleak for him, I was the one taking him in the 12th round in best ball, trying to get as many drafts in as I could. I love the role. I do like this 13.5 receiving number for him, though. I think, it's all about perspective. They should hand him the ball a ton. Minnesota should have 7,000 people in the box because Gabriel's starting. I don't know. I want a little bit of betting interest in this game. Between the two guys I mentioned, I like the Jordan Mason under a little bit more, just with how damn good Cleveland's been. But in the grand scheme of things, these are probably like quarter unit plays for me. I'm not going crazy. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, nothing to like for me here. Very tough landing spot for Dylan Gabriel overseas against the Brian Flores defense. Ugly game. I'm on the West Coast, so it's even earlier for me. I'm definitely sleeping through this one.
My big takeaway from this game is that Dylan Gabriel sounds like he was like a one-hit wonder from the 60s. You know, like he appeared on Ed Sullivan. You know, he sang a song about kissing a girl, and that was the end of it. You know, Dylan Gabriel. It's got that ring to it. That has nothing to do with what I'm going to bet on this game. The only thing I plan on doing is waking up, probably throwing in 12 toilet DFS lineups and watching them all lose before the 1 o'clock games kick off. Let's go to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson isn't playing. As a result, the Texans are 1.5-point road favorites over the Ravens. Total set at 40.5. Keith, is it Woody Marks time? Is the changing of the guard officially here?
I don't know if it's a complete changing of the guard, but we definitely saw some interesting stuff from Woody Marks. Nick Chubb is still playing about 40% of the snaps. I think he's still going to have an early down role. But what I'm interested in is Woody Marks' pass game role. He was up to, 58% of the snaps after playing 30% of the snaps in weeks 1 to 3, up to 58% of the snaps, saw an 18% target share. He's sitting at 2.5 receptions and like 15.5 receiving yards. I think that pass game role is absolutely Woody Marks's from here on out. He will eventually take over the full backfield, but what I feel most confident in right now is him having that pass game role.
All right. Justin, you have a take on that? Bales?
Yeah, I think that's a good call in terms of the pass game for Woody Marks. I actually like Nick Chubb, his rushing yards. I got it at 30.5 earlier this week. Again, it's just too low. It's not a good number there. Even though Marks is playing plenty of snaps, Nick Chubb is getting, right around the 50% mark of carries. And that's probably not really going to change all that much. If you look at all their metrics, I'm not saying Nick Chubb is the back that you want to go with, running your franchise for the future, but Woody Marks at the moment isn't really outproducing him all that much. They're pretty similar. I do think that Marks is a little bit better. And I think that the explosion is really what you have Woody Marks for versus Chubb. But their lines currently, they're basically splitting carries, and their lines currently are Woody Marks at 52.5 and Nick Chubb's at 32.5. It isn't something that makes all that much sense. Baltimore obviously is dealing with plenty of injuries. We know Lamar is not going to play. So Houston could be playing with the lead on top of obviously Baltimore now getting gashed on the defensive front with the run. So I think you kind of just hand the ball off here and see what happens. And if that's the case, Nick Chubb at 30 rushing yards, it's just too low.
Baltimore hasn't stopped anyone. Their defense has been absolutely atrocious. And I know they're dealing with a ton of injuries, but it's been rough on the defensive side of the ball for Baltimore.
What's Henry's rushing number? Because you got to lean under, right? Whatever it's going to be. I mean, you just keying in on him. That's pretty high. I don't know.
You would think that's. I was thinking the same thing there, honestly.
Yeah, a slew of injuries for the Ravens, as Keith mentioned. 6 big pieces did not practice today. Awuzie, one of their better corners. Kyle Hamilton, big time safety. Marlon Humphrey. Humphrey and Awuzie both have hamstring things, which could linger. a couple linebackers, and Roquan Smith. That's a big name too. So they haven't stopped anybody, and that trend might continue. Eventually, Nico Collins is going to have a monster game, and C.J. Stroud hasn't looked comfortable, rightfully so. That offensive line is bad. Two of the worst offensive lines in the league are in that AFC South, and it just makes me want to bash my head off the wall every time I got to sit through four quarters of watching the Titans or the Texans try to pass protect. But Baltimore is so banged up. Nico still has like a near 40% air yard share, about a 25% target share. Eventually, he's going to find some broken coverage. It might as well be against a bunch of backups this week against Baltimore.
I really like Houston here. I mean, you know, I think we've been watching Houston this year and saying, well, they're not playing up to their level. They're not playing that well. But I mean, look at what they've done. I mean, they lost to the Rams in Los Angeles 14-9 on opening day. Held the Rams. Looking at it now, holding the Rams to 14 points, not so shabby. Lost to the Bucs by a point, 2019. Lost to the Jags by a touchdown, 17-10. Then shut out the Titans. I mean, their defense is playing awesome. And now they're going up against a Ravens team without Jackson. I know we're the primetime props, not primetime leans, but I really like the Texans in this game. All right, let's move on. Let's go down to New Orleans. I'll stop doing that immediately. Where the Saints are 1.5 favorites. This line's been flipping back and forth, I feel like, all week. But at last I checked, they were 1.5 favorites over the visiting Malik Nabers-less New York Giants. Let's start with Keith. Chris Olave again. I mean, I feel like we've been pressing the Chris Olave button all year, and it hasn't paid off just yet. But you're ready for it.
I think this game's really interesting. Just when the Giants, we thought we were going to get some exciting things from them. They insert Jackson Dart and Cam Scadaboo, and then Malik Nabers blows out his knee, unfortunately, which is horrible to see. So back to bad times here for the New York football Giants. I think that the Saints are just able to move the ball here. The Giants defense has not put up much resistance this season. They've allowed like the eighth most passing yards in the league. And Olave's role, I'm still interested in chasing. I think that Rattler has played better than most people expected him to. Olave's up at a 28% target share. And the production hasn't been phenomenal for him, but he's very clearly the top target in the offense. 5.5 receptions feels a touch too low. I think that's my favorite way to play this, but I'm still interested in investing in Olave. He's eventually going to get a big play probably, but I think I feel most confident in the volume for Olave. Give me over 5.5 receptions for Olave. I think Kendre Miller is an interesting lean in this game as well. We saw his snap share jump up in week four, 19% of the snaps, weeks 1 to 3, 32% of the snaps in week four. The Giants have not been able to stop anyone on the ground at all. Fourth most rushing yards allowed. He's sitting at 28.5 rushing yards. So Kendre Miller, another lean that I like here.
Bales, I know you're looking at the Giants rookie quarterback.
Yes. Well, last week we kind of said, you know, if you're playing him against the Chargers, it's probably because you're designing runs for him. And then that, you know, very well came to fruition. He had 10 carries. The big thing for me here is that he had 7 designed runs. He had 31 yards on those designed runs, and he's still sitting in the mid 30s. So, you know, you can get a ton of yards on scrambles, especially if you catch someone in man and there's just a big lane for you. But if you're getting 90% of what you need on designed runs for a quarterback, there's a very, very good chance that you're going to beat that number. Mid 30s is just too low for someone that can run as well as Jackson Dart. And, you know, the matchup against the Saints, I don't really care one way or another. I do know that the Saints, I believe, are they still favorites? They're small favorites here.
1.5, yeah. But we also know that they play fast. So, you know, the Giants are going to have more opportunities as well.
Yeah, I think Dart, as long as he is sticking in that mid-30s for the rushing yards, I think it's just a little too low.
Yeah. Luch, what do you got? Anything here?
I like the Saints ground game. Keith mentioned Kendre Miller. I'm just getting some Blake Corum vibes. Everyone was pushing the Corum narrative. There was a lot of good coach speak. I know he fumbled. It's probably in the doghouse. Maybe that situation won't apply to Miller. I mean, this is like Miller's last hurrah. It's been a couple of seasons now, and they're giving him the benefit of the doubt with the clean bill of health this year to try to get going. So I can definitely get behind some Kendre Miller props. I actually like Kamara on the ground. His involvement through the year has been disappointing, but You know, he still has a really nice role on the ground. He, Keith mentioned how bad New York has been defensively against the ground. I mean, it's awful. They're bottom five in stuff rate. They're bottom five in yards before contact per attempt. And they are completely atrocious and inept against man gap runs, apparently. They're giving up over 7 yards a carry, according to Fantasy Points, in man concepts running the ball. And New Orleans is kind of split with their schemes offensively. They run a decent amount of zone. They run a decent amount of man. I think we're going to see a couple of explosive runs, whether it's from Kamara or Kendra Miller or both of them. So I like the Saints on the ground in this one.
A question for the three of you. If Neighbors was healthy, what would you put his receptions and yardage totals at? Ballpark. Take a guess. I don't have an answer. That's why I'm asking.
7.5, 83.5.
All right, so Slayton is like half of that, 3.5 and 42.5. Is Slayton 3/4 as Neighbors, maybe? I don't know. I mean, he's stepping into that role. I'm looking at it. And I'm also looking at the, you know, we came tantalizingly close last week to the Cal Spear special with Addy Mitchell, you know. And, you know, you could do the same with Slayton, under 3.5 catches, over 42.5 yards and a score. It's not out of the realm of possibility, right?
Yeah, I don't hate that. I think that's he's the type of guy that can do that for sure.
I don't hate it. He was doing a shit ton of cardio with Russell Wilson. He was running like 90% of the routes, no targets or anything. Last week, he was up to a 50% air yard share, 19% target share. So, yeah, I can get him.
Seems a little low. Yeah, those numbers seem a little low to me. All right, so that's I like Slayton this week. I really remember Patrick Mahomes. Oh, we all love that touchdown prop. It didn't happen. It's fine. It was a good bet. Process was correct. Process me being, what do you think? And you guys said, no, it's a good bet. All right, let's go to where are we? We're in Carolina. Man, another just, you know, red letter game here. The Dolphins minus Tyreek Hill, 1.5 favorites on the road against Carolina. I mean, there's only one player in this game that I have any interest in, and I have a feeling that Bells is going to tell me all about him.
Yeah, I think that A-Chain's the obvious guy here. Both teams atrocious against the run. I think if you want to play Rico Dowdle, no problems whatsoever with that. But I think that you're just taking the running backs here. Both teams are going to want to establish the run. I have a feeling that they're both going to stay relatively close in this game. I feel like it's not the type of matchup where either one of these teams is going to blow the other out. And, you know, they're just going to hand the ball off quite a bit. Sometimes it's kind of as simple as you have a very talented back like Devin Achane, and you have a defense that is absolutely atrocious against the run like Carolina, and you kind of just plug and play them together, and that's what I'm doing here.
Keith?
Yeah, I completely agree with the Achane stuff. I think his pass game role could see a bump as well without Tyreek Hill. I mean, he might have to line up in the slot a little bit more. So I like rushing and receiving yards if you can find that for Achane. I also think looking at Ollie Gordon is interesting in the spot. We've kind of been waiting for him to get more of a role. If Achane has to play more in the passing game, maybe that opens up a few extra carries for Ollie Gordon. He's sitting around 20 yards on his number. So I don't hate the over on that in a really good matchup, a chance that Miami has to in a game that Miami has a chance to play ahead in. Maybe we see Gordon get more involved. Nothing signal-wise that points to this is going to be the week or anything, but I think the numbers are still low enough that you can take a shot there. But yeah, Achane is the obvious lean. I really liked looking at this Carolina rushing attack. I was all over Chuba Hubbard before he was ruled out this week. Actually wrote him up earlier. So it's a great spot for the Carolina ground game. Rico Dowdle now stepping in, and his number's about 5 yards over where Hubbard originally opened this week. Obviously, he should have the backfield mostly to himself here with no Chuba Hubbard. So I like looking at Dowdle overs now.
Luch?
Yeah, I'm with you on Dowdle. Nothing more to say on Achane. I think he's a fantastic play. Dowdle, I mean, let's not forget the massive role he had in Dallas. You made a lot of great points, Keith. I mean, Chuba was running routes on over half of the pass plays for Carolina as well. So I'm kind of hoping FanDuel opens up some receiving numbers here for Dowdle as well, because as I am interested in the rushing numbers, I kind of want to see some receptions and receiving yard numbers for Dowdle as well. I think he's going to be a complete workhorse. And if you hit him on the waiver wire while this, you know, Chuba missing back-to-back practice thing was breaking, if he was available, then you might have found a nice RB2 and you know, a low end RB one for this week against Miami. Not many games will Carolina be competitive in. This could be one that there's such, maybe they went outright. There's such a wide range of outcomes with Miami right now. It's really tough to project.
You know, what's interesting to me kind of standing out here is the total. It's at 44 and a half, which feels higher than, I mean, when I do my own guess, my personal guess, the lines, I had it like 41. It's a little higher than I thought that would be. I mean, it's 3 full points higher than the Saints Giants game. And I don't think we're not going to sit here and say that Tua and Bryce Young are markedly better than Rattler and Dart, you know? So I think, you know, quote unquote, Vegas sees that. I think this game might be a little bit more exciting than, you know, the public, present company included, thinks. All to say, I'm probably going to build a couple of DFS lineups around this game now that I'm talking it through. Are you guys surprised by the total, or it just seems a little high to me. That I guess that's really all it is.
I think for me, it's I think it's a general consensus of more groupthink of Miami, where Tua constantly is making a foolish play, making something that looks ridiculous, making a bad read to end the Bills game. And it has become such an echo chamber of how atrocious Tua is that people forget that Miami is actually scoring the ball. They can find points. I don't necessarily know if I thought that it was going to open in the mid-40s or it would sit in the mid-40s. I don't do that much, honestly, with totals myself. But I do think that we are kind of in just like this weird echo chamber of how atrocious Miami is, to the point where, like, regardless of anything they do, they're going to be viewed as bad until they either change their head coach. People are now souring there. Change Tua out. People have now turned on him. He's terrible, even if, you know, he's throwing fine. Most people would agree that they just naturally think he's bad. All that kind of stuff. Plus, obviously, you lose Tyreek Hill.
Yeah. And
it's a ton of, I don't know, it's a ton of overlooking how their offense has actually performed at times, I guess.
I think you're right.
I also thought that.
I think you're right on the group thing, but I think part of it is because we all remember 2 years ago when for a minute there, this offense was unstoppable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will. Yeah, I think
the same players, you know.
Yeah. If you go from like the best offense in the league to an average offense,
something's wrong.
It looks terrible.
It looks terrible.
But like you're still an average offense, you know?
Right.
I have one more question, and I know you're down on the Carolina's bell, so I'll open the floor to you and Keith and Jeff. Ted McMillan, what do we think of him? He's seen at least 8 targets in every game. We know Miami is kind of a mess defensively. Does Jalen Coker matter in this situation? Bells, we were on a couple shows a couple of weeks ago, and you mentioned, you know, you saw firsthand a couple of big plays get wiped out, you know, via penalty or something else for McMillan. I mean, the dude's eventually got to have a breakout game here, right?
Yeah, I love McMillan. He's so fun. The one thing I will say, kind of in terms of limiting expectations, one, I think he is underrated at the moment because he's had so many big plays kind of just go by the wayside because he was either a foot out of bounds. There was a defensive pass interference, so they didn't have to challenge one of his catches, just stuff like that. But I also think that McMillan kind of is viewed as really good because of those ridiculous catches that he does make. When at the time being, and we kind of knew this coming into his rookie year because it happened at Arizona, there's some really simple plays that he misses as well. And, you know, there's like these quick slants that he just doesn't get his head around fast enough, all kinds of stuff like that. So it's a little disappointing at the moment, but also, yeah, that game's coming. He's going for 150 at some point. It's just a matter of when it happens. And this feels like a kind of matchup that it could happen. I do agree with that. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Let's go to Indianapolis, where the Colts are 6.5 point favorites over the visiting Raiders, 47.5 total. Bales, it looks like you got something to say about my own personal MVP, Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I feel like I've been talking a ton. I'm gonna keep this one short. We had Daniel Jones right around 210 yards for multiple weeks. When that was happening, we had right around 240 some yards for his passing and rushing. They've now bumped his passing up you know, 15 yards or it's too small on my screen right now to see what that says, but
226 and change.
Yep, right, 16 yards there. Yeah. They haven't bumped his passing and rushing up. They actually kept that like almost exactly the same. So essentially they just gave him more pass yards, took away his rushing yards, and no reason for it. I mean, this game could turn into a blowout, or Las Vegas could find the offense that they occasionally have, and they could keep it kind of close for a little bit. If that's the case, you know, I'll keep playing the over on Daniel Jones, and I've been playing it since the beginning of the season, so I feel like it's less risky for me personally because I've won so many times on him that like one loss isn't going to destroy my bankroll or anything. But I mean, doesn't it just feel too low still?
For somebody who's going to be the MVP, I definitely think so. Yeah. Keith, what do you think?
Tyler Warren has been a favorite all season long. The books have finally adjusted his yardage total up to where it should be. We've been hammering him at like 40 yards all season long. He's up to around 60 yards now, which is where he should be with this role that he has in the offense. Receptions at 4.5. I don't mind a look there if you want to go there, but unfortunately, one of our early season favorites kind of has caught the market has caught up to us. So not a ton for me to like here on the Indianapolis side. On the Las Vegas side, I'm looking at Jacoby Myers. I think this role is growing. Brock Bauer still a little bit banged up, potentially getting healthier, but now we have Michael Mayer coming back as well. I just don't feel comfortable about what I'm seeing from Bauer so far. So Jacoby Myers and his role in the offense is something to really like here. I think they're going to be trailing in this game against the surprising team that is the Colts and how well they've played so far this season. And when we get that type of game script, we can really see the receptions pile up for Jacoby Myers. So Jacoby Myers over 5.5, I like quite a bit.
Yeah, Bowers, he didn't practice again today. So that's two missed practices in a row. So he's certainly in doubt for Sunday. Luch, is there anything that catches your eye out here in Indy?
Yeah, I like this game for points, and maybe I have my DFS cap on a little bit too much. But I mean, the Colts are good. Shane Steichen is a good play caller, or so it seems. I've seen enough of him. I'm really impressed with what they're doing. I kind of hope the Raiders kind of play with at least a little bit of a lead, because this is another matchup that Genty could do work in. And there won't be many cupcake matchups for him because the Raiders O-line is so bad, like really bad. But not only are the Colts bad up front, they're giving up the fifth most rushing yards before contact per attempt, according to Fantasy Points. And digging deeper, they are atrocious against zone run schemes. And the Raiders run the fourth most zone run in the NFL right now. So I have no problem going back to Genty as long as they're not getting throttled. You know, if they're within a touchdown, I feel okay about it. I mean, you know, he said hello last week in a big way. It's about time. So I do like Genty as long as this thing doesn't get out of control.
Anything else, fellas, or are we ready to move on?
Go for it.
Moving on then. All right. Let's go to Philly, where the most boring team since the 1920 Chicago Bears, Philadelphia Eagles, will are 4.5-point home favorites against the kind of disappointing, all things considered, Broncos, I think. 43.5 is the total. The Eagles, I'm not sure why they're doing what they're doing. They're winning. So, you know, they're 18-0 in Jalen Hurts' last 18 healthy games. So they're winning. Barkley's not doing anything. Their offensive line is in shambles. They run about 33 different trick plays a game, and they keep winning. And I AJ Brown's angry. I got nothing to say. Does anyone have any, like, is there anything out here that anyone likes? Because I think this is just, how could you like anything? That's really my point with the Eagles. Is you're going to take a Barkley over? Ah, man. You're going to take a Barkley touchdown? I don't know. You're going to take AJ Brown receptions? Man, maybe. We are having a reality check here, because what do you do with the Eagles? How do you even bet this team? Anyone, take it. A lot of head shaking.
I don't want to be part of it.
I absolutely hate it. If anything, I'm about to hit that J.K. Dobbins plus 165 touchdown line. I just feel like for a guy who has control of a backfield, he's not going anywhere. He looks pretty good. In this day and age of touchdown betting, that seems pretty reasonable. Other than that, I'm pretty much out. AJ Brown was a ticking time bomb. The cryptic tweets were eventually going to start firing off. He's a me guy. He could preach about winning all he wants, but you know, like all the good receivers, they want the ball. So it is what it is.
I mean, and he, outside of Dobbs, I mean, I'm not touching Bo Nix on the road in Philly. I mean, that's crazy. And, you know, and they're running three tight ends, eight receivers, you know, two running. You can't do anything in Denver either. This, yeah, just turn the game off, move on. That's what I'm doing. By the way, here's your score. Eagles win 2017. Easy. Easy game. All right. Here's a game that everybody's talking about this week, which is funny. I mean, well, everyone in the at least daily fantasy sports world. Cowboys visiting 1.5 point favorites against the Jets. The Cowboys clearly are a team that can keep scoring and allow the other opponent, their opponents to keep scoring. The question is, in this game, everyone's hoping for a shootout here. The question is, are the Jets going to allow that to happen? Let's go upstairs to Mr. Eister there. What do you think is going to happen in this game? Who do you like? What's happening?
Yeah, we've seen this Dallas shootout play out a couple of times already this season, and I think that's absolutely going to continue. They have a very good offense, and they have maybe the worst defense in the NFL. So they're able to keep up with teams, but they just continuously allow teams to keep scoring. They have allowed the most passing yards in the league, and it's not even close. They're averaging over 297 yards allowed through the air per game. Wow. The next lowest team is Baltimore at 265. So it's like a massive gap between them and the next worst team. On the Jets side, we have an alpha receiver, and it's like a very clear alpha receiver with maybe the second best role in the entire NFL behind Puka Nacua. That's Garrett Wilson. The target share is up over 33%. The first read rate is the best in the NFL. It's a smash spot for Garrett Wilson in an extremely cupcake matchup. 62.5 yards, I believe, is his receiving prop for line. That's my favorite bet of the week.
You like it, Bells?
Yeah. I mean, Keith just nailed that. Garrett Wilson set way too low. I think if you can get anything with like Justin Fields fantasy points on one of those apps, I think it's just way too low. He obviously has so much rushing potential. I think he can air it out better than most people believe. Garrett Wilson's the guy that really sticks out. Fields second for me. I think even like Breece Hall is fine. They're finally using him as a receiver a little bit more, but you know, he's still losing a little bit of work. Even with Braylon Allen out, it makes no sense. He should be like a complete workhorse guy. It doesn't add up, but I think that they're all in good spots. I don't actually know what I even would want to play for Dallas. George Pickens, obvious, but I don't necessarily know if I want the guy that's going to get shadowed by Sauce Gardner. And the other issue is that even like the Cowboys aren't, or pick, I guess it's more Pickens than the Cowboys. Pickens isn't the kind of guy that is going to go into the slot to get Gardner off of him. He's ran like a few routes out of the slot the entire season. He's strictly going to stay outside, and you know, Gardner is going to match up outside. So, I don't know. Dallas doesn't look that great to me, but I also acknowledge that their offense knows how to score. So, like, someone could do it. I just don't know who. I feel like Wilson's kind of the guy that, you know, makes the most sense in this type of situation.
What do you got, Luch?
I'll give Keith, you know, whatever he wants to say, because I think Matt Eberflus is bad at every job he's taken. He took over as the Cowboys defensive coordinator after a freaking train wreck in Chicago trying to run the show there. I don't know what Dallas is doing. They play man coverage at a 5% rate this year. You know what that means? A shit ton of zone. It is so bizarre. And they played a decent amount of man last year, but a league low 5%. You get De'Ron Bland back last year, didn't seem to matter. I know we talked a little bit about that offline. Maybe it would do something. They played 13% man coverage last week. So not a ton. I mean, that game was just insane up and down. So I have nothing pleasant to say about Dallas either. If I remember correctly, they have 5 sacks this year, which is not good. No analytical take for that. It's just not good. But also, I like Mason Taylor to score a touchdown if I'm looking for something else here. He has 13 targets over the last 2 weeks, played like 80-some-odd percent of the snaps. they made an effort to want to get him the ball. And unlike Blake Corum yesterday, they were truthful about what they wanted to do with the football. So I like Garrett Wilson a lot. I'm getting deja vu with how Fields peppered DJ Moore a couple of years ago. But I think Mason Taylor, you know, he's almost plus 400 to score a touchdown, I think, is a good look against a defense that just can't stop a nosebleed. Keith, are we seeing the Eberflus effect here? I'm sure you have, you know, read up on him and watched enough of him. It's just a weird fit, him, the defensive coordinator of this team. And they're terrible. They're absolutely terrible.
We know what he's going to do. And he's going to play conservative and try to keep everything in front. They haven't been great at keeping things in front is the problem. And when that's happening, we see it break in a hurry. They're not getting any pressure, as you alluded to, and they're going to sit back in zone and try to keep everything in front of them. If their corners aren't up to sticking to their assignments and things, like I think that the league knows what Eberflus is going to do. If we know it, certainly the league knows it. And it's just become an easy point of attack. I don't see things getting better for Dallas is what I'm trying to say.
Does the way that they play with this 95% zone, do you think that interferes or maybe caps Justin Fields' rushing numbers? I mean, he's at 51.5. I mean, man coverage is where, you know, running quarterbacks eat. Right. But, but Fields, you can never, you mentioned his fantasy score. I think he has top two fantasy scores this year in the three games he's played.
For me, no, I don't think so, because obviously zone tends to cap scrambles, whereas Fields is going to have a few designed runs. The other thing is that Dallas so far hasn't been good against rushing quarterbacks. They're giving up like the fifth or sixth most rushing yards per game to quarterbacks. So the whole defense is broken. The entire thing is you have Diggs, who is out here begging to play man. That's like the only thing he wants to do. They refuse to do it. It's the entire thing is just terrible.
I got another question. So everyone loves Wilson. I love Wilson. There's no reason not to love Wilson. How comfortable are we laddering Wilson? I mean, you could get him all the way up to 150 yards at 1500. I mean, and 100 yards at 370. Is that something that we're interested in?
I'm totally in on that. If Dallas is able to keep up here, I don't see any reason that this number doesn't land in the 90 plus range for Garrett Wilson. Like, I think the receiving yards number that we're seeing on him is just, it's wrong. It's the only way I can put it. Bales kind of alluded to it. Fields is better as a passer than I think the market sees him as. I don't mind the over on Fields passing yards. If we're worried about the rushing, just take the passing yards. It's under 200 still. He's been over 200 in two of the three games that he started. The other game, he got absolutely shut out by Buffalo and left early. But I mean, we've seen him beat this number twice already, and this is the absolute best matchup that you can have. So just give me Fields passing yards and the ladder on Wilson, I'm totally in on.
Is there another player in football right now, like Justin Fields, where from one play to the next, he could look like literally like the best quarterback alive and then the absolute worst football player to ever play the game? It's unbelievable, you know? Fields is electric. You know, when he's on, man, God, he is something to watch. I hope this game lives up to like the, you know, what everyone's hyping it up to be, because it should. If it does, it could be a wild back and forth game. And again, we might see some stat lines, because both offenses are relatively condensed here, you know, and you can see some real big numbers coming out of this game.
My only reservation, like if I'm playing devil's advocate, is I know we're in October. It's still such a small sample size. You know, Dallas has to move the ball, though, because if they can't, and again, they're without CeeDee Lamb, you know, as most people know, the Jets still run such a high rate in neutral situations that I would get a little bit worried if for some reason Dallas comes out completely flat. I'm having a tough time reading the Jets defense a little bit here. They've given up a ton of points in a lot of the box score. They're only giving up a 5.9 ADOT, which is 30th in the league. They haven't given up a ton of passing yards. I'm curious to see how teams are going to start playing George Pickens, you know, moving forward, because, you know, let's face it, Javonte Williams is just fine in the run game. Doesn't exactly wow me. You know, are they going to make Jalen Tolbert and Turpins and, you know, Ferguson getting peppered with his, you know, 5-yard targets every play beat them? So that would be my only reservation. Like, I'm not completely positive that Dallas is going to move the ball, although I think they'll be good enough to, you know, for Wilson to kind of cruise.
I think this game busts if the Cowboys do what they want to do, right? Which is Javonte Williams, you know, 25 carries. That's what they want, right? I think this game goes off if the Cowboys are forced, like they were last week, into comeback mode, you know, and Dax is winging it. But if the Cowboys can come out and, like, actually, like, move the ball on the ground, this game could stall out pretty quickly, I think. So, yeah, I think it could get this, you know, but nobody knows, as usual. But there's a lot of ways this game could go. And I'm rooting for the big shootout, but there's a lot of ways it could go, I think.
I lean shootout just because we saw it in Green Bay last week. Right. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Green Bay as the best team in the NFL, and Dallas came out here and just moved the ball at will. Dak played amazing in that game, and that was without CeeDee Lamb as well. So we just saw it last week. I think the Packers' defense is better than the Jets' defense at this point. And Dallas just moved it up and down the field on them.
And I will say this, you know, another feather in the cap for Dallas. Going back to week one, which seems like an eternity ago, Dallas left a ton on the field. All those drops. Dak probably left about 70 yards out there because of him. So, you know, Dallas could have straight up stole that game in week one, which seems like forever ago. So, yeah, maybe their offense is for real. I want to see it another week. I'm going to play some kind of angle on this one, and I'm still leaning Mason Taylor, and I'm okay with Garrett Wilson as well.
There. Well, listen, if you thought the Vikings, Browns, Saints, Giants, Dolphins, Panthers were not your cup of tea, have I got a game for you. The Cardinals, 8.5-point home favorites against the Titans. The 41.5 is the total. The Cardinals are down to their 17th string running back. They haven't looked particularly good to begin with, and now they're facing a Titans team that is not ready for prime time. Michael Carter rushing yards? Trey McBride catches, maybe? I don't know. Again, this is another game that I'm just like, nothing when I was looking at it. Looked particularly appetizing. Anyone have a differing opinion?
This is the game. I know we said it a few weeks ago. I know Luch said it. This is the game for Cam Ward.
Wow.
You get the pass funnel from Arizona. You get the, I believe they were 7.5-point underdogs. If Cam Ward can't beat like the 187 yards or whatever he's set at in this game, I think it might be time to call it quits, Tennessee.
Wow.
that's about all that I'm looking at. I don't trust Michael Carter. Marvin Harrison Jr., fine. Like, I'm not opposed to it, but I don't trust him whatsoever. Arizona's going to score. Like, someone there is going to do something. I just don't have the slightest clue who. I think if I want something in this game, you just got to trust that Cam Ward can handle the pass funnel and hit the ridiculously low passing yards number that he has.
All right, I'm offering minus 200 that Luch is going to mention that Titans receiver whose name I can't pronounce.
Yeah, I do like Iowa Manor, 36 and a half. Calvin Ridley. I'm getting D-Hop vibes. I'm getting sell the farm and play for a lotto pick again next year and then trade that pick and double down and pull off what the Texans did and, like, revamp this thing and get a receiver and an edge. I don't know how Brian Callahan is still employed. I think Cam Ward has it. But much like Eberflus made Chicago look like a dumpster fire last year, like, Brian Callahan and company, Nick Holtz, who never did anything with Trevor Lawrence as the offensive coordinator, mind you, he doesn't call plays in Tennessee either. After Brian Callahan demoted himself, he didn't even give play calling to his offensive coordinator. He gave it to the quarterback's coach. So what the hell do you even do? It's like his job just became important. He just hangs out at the water cooler all day. These route concepts make me want to puke. I just, it's so egregiously bad, the disservice this organization is doing to Cam Ward, that I am on the other side of this. I like the Cardinals and their pass catchers, and I am talking myself into more of them for DFS because there's a lot of really appealing spots and places for points this week. And Trey McBride looks like he's going to be a little bit popular, but I like Marvin Harrison. I like Kyler. The Cardinals are passing at the highest rate in the league when they're leading by 7 points or more. I get it. They looked completely broken in primetime last week. Broken. But I will tell you one team that is more broken than the Arizona Cardinals. It's the Tennessee freaking Titans. And there's a little bit of funnel over there, too. The Titans are decent for two quarters. They were damn near beating the Broncos for, you know, before the whole debacle where their head coach didn't know the rules and everything in Denver, right? They forced four turnovers, and they ran out of gas because their offense couldn't sustain drives. They were beating the Rams in week two. If they had competent head coaching, the Titans would be 2-2. And you know, nobody would be like, well, it's time to give up on Cam Ward. I get it. From a betting angle, it might be time to give up on Cam Ward. But I don't think it's Cam Ward. There's no talent around him. Calvin Ridley is banged up. He practiced in a limited fashion finally. I wouldn't be shocked if they found someone desperate enough as a contender to take him in that contract. I'm getting weird vibes here. I don't know how Callahan is still employed. I think the Cardinals are really sneaky, and we know they lost Connor. They lost Trey Benson. Everybody rushes to the waiver wire to grab DeMarcado and Carter, who aren't good enough to be number twos on any team. I think there's a chance that Arizona is forced to throw a little bit more, and the Titans defense holds up at least for like two or three quarters, and then they just get completely gassed because they're out there way too much. So I'm really digging, you know, Marvin Harrison from a contrarian side. I looked at a couple of sites across the industry, and Keith, maybe you've dug up a little more than me, but he really wasn't carrying a lot of ownership, and the Tennessee has been in getting slaughtered game after game here. And I think this is kind of a contrarian look, and it's not really getting the attention it deserves from a Cardinal standpoint.
Luch likes it. I don't know. I'm still staying the hell away from this game.
I don't love it. Murray. It's hard to trust Kyler Murray for me at this point. And Marvin Harrison has looked pretty uninterested at times this season. So I'm leaning more towards Jeff with this one. Yeah. Luch knows the Titans better than anyone. So if he says it's a good spot, then I'm willing to trust him. But I didn't have anything I liked at first glance.
Well, he's convinced me to throw. I'm going to play a DFS lineup now with Murray, McBride, and Harrison with the other guy coming back. How do you pronounce? What's the guy's name?
Iomanner? Yeah.
Iomanner? I'll get it in a few years.
The Ridley thing is just so vague, right? It was really discreet last weekend, and then he played like, I don't know, just a little over 50% of the snaps or something like that. And Iomanner played season high in snaps. So I don't really know what's going on. He's been terrible this year too, even before this little possible phantom injury situation he's had. I mean, people were steaming him up into the third round in August again. Every year, death taxes and people steaming up Calvin Ridley in best ball in August when their quarterbacks are Trevor Lawrence or their play caller is Brian Callahan and just play end every year. Get me off this game because we'll have to take out another window.
All right, let's go to Seattle. The Seahawks, 3.5-point favorites over the visiting Buccaneers, the banged-up Buccaneers, which means Rashad White is back in our lives. Keith, what do you think about Rashad White?
I mean, it's going to be a huge role for him, I think. Sean Tucker is still there, but it's going to be the Rashad White show. And especially in the passing game, I think, is where we can really look to Rashad White. He kind of had that role already, even with Bucky Irving. He's sitting at 3.5 receptions against a pretty good Seattle defense. I think Seattle plays with a lead. I think Rashad White is very involved in the passing game. Over 3.5 receptions looks pretty good to me.
Bales, you see anything out in Seattle that catches you?
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I have Rashad White over 21.5 receiving yards, so I also like the receptions. I think people kind of forget how good of a receiving back he is because he, for a little bit of time, was a pretty bad runner. And then Bucky Irving obviously came in, was much better. But Rashad White's like an extremely good receiving back. On the other side, I just think you can go back to JSN if you want. He gets so many targets. Sam Darnold has a very, very good deep ball. So you're constantly getting, you know, the threat of a 40 yarder there. Burned me last week. I think he missed by like 3 or 4 yards, but like, there's just no reason not to go back to it at the high 70s, low 80s. I think that's probably about it. I do think that Chris Godwin is a little interesting. I think he had like 147 air yards last week or something. His A dot was almost 15. So a ton left on the table. I don't necessarily know if I trust his health at the moment to, you know, be efficient with his targets and stuff. But if they're going to throw him the ball a ton, I think that it's at least interesting to look there.
Luch?
Yeah, just 11 targets in the last 2 weeks for JSN. after just getting absolutely peppered, and maybe teams are starting to adjust. But, you know, speaking of funnels, Tampa Bay is doing what Tampa Bay has done the last couple of years. Defensively, they're second in holding teams and yards per carry. They have a top five stuff rate as well. So we know Seattle wants to run the ball. They have the second highest neutral rush percentage in the league. But will they be able to run the ball? I don't know. I'm totally okay with going back to JSN, and this team is better when he's cooking and he's getting those targets. So, and not that it's a sexy pick, but I like JSN this week too.
Anything else, boys? Yep. We're moving on. Moving on. Let's do it. This game looks like pretty good on paper, I think. And the Chargers, 2.5-point favorites over the Commanders. Jaden Daniels back in town. 47.5 total. This game looks like we might have some fun with it. Bales, I know there's an old man Keenan. You still like him, huh? Another week?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Keith agrees with us. We've been just hitting it every single week. 4.5 yeah. receptions. It's a dumb number. Keenan Allen has a very large role with the Chargers. 4.5 receptions is too low for that. I didn't realize how many bets I had in this game, and it's a little uncertain right now. I went back to Quentin Johnston. I think that's pretty obvious at the low total for him. It really doesn't make that much sense. And on the other side, I honestly can't believe I'm doing it, but Chris Rodriguez, I took at 23.5 rushing yards. He's just consistently been good, and everyone's just like, nah, Chris Rodriguez isn't good. And like 5 yards a carry every single time. I mean, it's good enough. He's going to get reasonable touches. And I don't know. I don't love the matchup against the Chargers, but like, if he only needs 3 to 4 yards a carry, it's not that bad, right? Mm.
Keith?
Yeah, I'm completely with Bales on the Chargers wide receivers. I've been on Keenan Allen for every week this season. It feels like I was hyping him up a couple of weeks ago and stating that maybe he was the 1B to McConkey's 1A, and Bales pushed back and said, what about Johnson? And we have seen that completely play out. McConkey is the number 3 in this target tree. And Quentin Johnston has looked amazing. He looked like the first round pick that he was selected as, after struggling with drops for a couple of years, has really taken to the lead role in this offense, right next to Keenan Allen. So both Chargers receivers, I like Keenan Allen on the receptions, Quentin Johnston on the receiving yards. That's my angle here.
Luch?
I like Johnston, and I'm in. It's strange, the drastic turnaround he's had. You know, he put his woes behind him, and like we've talked on this show, I mean, Bales, you said it, he was getting open and just he wasn't catching the ball last year. What I find really appealing is Washington is giving up the highest ADOT to receivers in the league. So it's just screaming downfield threat, Quentin Johnston, like longest reception, hit all those props. I know you're probably opening your app right now, Bales, to put some more bets in after I endorse Quentin Johnston there. But yeah, I'm in. And the Chargers are passing the ball. I guess I'm a little shocked that McConkey has been doing anything but getting close to there. He just hasn't been it. But they're top 5 in the league when they're trailing by 7. They're top 3 in the league in neutral situations, and they're top 3 in the league when they're leading by 7 or more. So I dig the Omarion Hampton thing. His role is huge, but it's clear what they want to do. They know they have the weapons to do it. And when Keenan Allen is your number 3, you're going to have the advantage. You're going to have a great matchup on every single play.
All right. For longtime listeners of Primetime Props, and, you know, of course, long time is a month, no show is complete without me giving you some batshit crazy idea for MVP. So here we go. Let's say that the Chargers lose this game because their offensive line is in shambles and the Commanders are a decent team and they got Jaden Daniels back this week, you know. And let's say the Commanders eke out a win and Daniels does okay. The next 2 weeks for Daniels, the Commanders are home against the Bears and then they're on the road in Dallas. Two games where we could see Jaden Daniels put up, quite frankly, MVP-type looking numbers. Now, I'm not saying that you should go bet Jaden Daniels for MVP at plus 5,000 at sportsbooks all across America, but I am saying that you get Jaden Daniels MVP for 2 pennies over at Kalshi, right? Maybe the next 3 games show a little something. That number goes from maybe 2 cents to a dime. You cash out, 5x your money. You write me a nice little thank you note.
I really like that. I like it a little more than your – it's more reasonable than your Daniel Jones take. although, I mean, he's cooking and he's in a good spot to get another win.
But if they won that game last week, which they should have, if AD doesn't drop that touchdown, yada blah yada yada, and the Colts win that game, believe me, there'd be at least two or three people, including me, that would be talking Jones MVP.
I pushed back on you when you said the Colts were the better team. The Colts looked like the better team. I'm willing to give you that one.
Yeah. So Daniel Jones would have been. But, yeah, how about, you know, if the Commanders come in and win this game, the next two games for Jaden Daniels are against the Cowboys and Bears. You can't have two better games on the schedule, right?
I can't wait for a week, I don't know, let's say 8, and Brock Purdy has a setback, and the 49ers are 7-0.
Mac Jones MVP.
And we're touting Mac Jones. I mean, by the way, I tip my cap to the freaking 49ers. Kyle Shanahan, say what you want about the guy. He definitely has some bad games. But they just keep winning. And they have crushed survivor pools everywhere last night. So yeah. RIP to your survivor pool, potentially, if you had the Rams.
All right. Last game on the docket for us is the Lions, 10.5-point road favorites against the Joe Burrow-less Bengals. Bales, I know you want to talk about David Montgomery. I want to see what you say. I want to know, do you know the narrative that's going on with David Montgomery this week as well?
That he's returning home and it's going to be the first time his sister's at one
of his games. Yeah. He's -180 to score a touchdown. It's absurd.
Yeah, he's scoring a touchdown. He might get two. You could throw some change on three. I'm sure the odds are real good. Yeah. I think even if that weren't the narrative, which I think there's few narratives that I like. I think that's actually a strong narrative.
Well, it's a strong narrative, not because it's a nice story. He's coming home. His sister who can't travel gets to see him play. But if there's one coach in the NFL that I think gives off the vibes of someone who's be like, yeah, we're going to get you your score, it's Campbell, right?
Yep. But then on top of it, it's the game. Like, this is the perfect game for him. Jahmyr Gibbs is the guy. They don't really want him, you know, probably to play a ton when they're absolutely dominating, which means Montgomery comes in, he gets a few extra carries. Cincinnati's defense, Cincinnati is in shambles. You take out Joe Burrow, and I've never seen a team collapse without one. And don't get me wrong, I know how important quarterback is. I know how good Joe Burrow is. But we've seen other elite quarterbacks go down and other teams have looked competent. Cincinnati doesn't. Browning is legit bad. I just expect Detroit absolutely destroys them. They're going to run the ball as much as humanly possible in this game. David Montgomery's only at 50 yards. I mean, 50 plus yards, grab a touchdown. If you want like crazy odds, throw him on like 100 plus yards and 2 plus touchdowns. Like, it's not the craziest thing that could happen this week. And I'm sure you can get some real good odds for that.
You like the narrative, Keith?
I do. I just, the way the game script plays out, I think this is a smash spot for David Montgomery anyway, without the narrative. So like it just sets up as a game where he's going to get a ton of work anyway. Take out any narrative that you want to. So I'm completely with Bales on that one. I've been chasing Jamar Chase since the move to Browning at quarterback. And I'm so frustrated because I feel like I have absolutely nailed what the Bengals intend to do. And that's move Chase inside and throw him the ball at the line of scrimmage. That's exactly what they've done. They just have been so inefficient that they cannot run enough plays where he can hit over 5.5 receptions. And it's driving me absolutely wild. Because his ADOT has fallen to like under 5 yards, and they're like, they just can't stay on the field long enough for him to hit the number. I'm going right back to Jamar Chase at 5.5 receptions. The role is exactly what I thought it was going to be with Browning under center. Like, they're going to use short passing to try to move the ball. I don't know if they're going to be efficient at it this week because they failed the last 2 weeks. But like, exactly what I expected to happen with the offense has happened, and I haven't gotten paid off for it yet. So I like a ladder on Jamar Chase's receptions as well, because I feel like he could catch 10 passes if they could ever find any efficiency.
One thing I will say that looks good for that is if you look at Browning, because we do have like, it's not a huge sample, but he's played in some games. Browning has been atrocious on the road. I think he has over 17 points in one road start in his career, or maybe not necessarily start, but when he played 80% or more of the snaps, in one game. I think it was against Jacksonville in like 2023 or something. At home, he's better. I mean, I wouldn't say he's good, but maybe he can at least get him the ball.
Does he need to be good to throw six screen passes to Jamar Chase? Like, he doesn't need to be good.
So, I mean, at home, it feels like it lines up better this week for you.
Yeah, I think this game feels to me like the Lions they never take their foot off the gas, right? And so if the Bengals can show a little bit of life, like this, you know, it's like, remember, like, I don't know, the old cartoons, like one for you, one for me, one for me, one, two for you, one for me, one, two, three. Like, I feel like, you know, for every touchdown the Bengals score, the Lions are going to score two, you know? And I don't think they're going to stop, you know? So I feel like, you know, I like a lot of the Lions overs, touchdowns. I love Jameson Williams. Like, they're trying to, like, get him going. I feel like at, you know, 50 and a half yards, that's one catch for Williams if they get him the ball. Yeah, it's a tasty setup for the Lions this week. Luch, anything you like there?
Yeah, I mean, I just keep trying to figure out what happened, and I keep coming back to the line in Cincy has been bad for years, but it's exponentially worse now than it is protecting the quarterback than it was a couple of years ago. Like you said, we have nine games for Browning from 2023. He was 12th in the league in yards per attempt, and he was average in quarterback rating. He kind of held it down pretty nicely. That line has just gotten so much worse, which, you know, just speaks even higher on how Joe Burrow navigates the pocket. And there's no surprise that he keeps freaking dying every year because he can't be, you know, there's no protection. So that's just, you know, my biggest takeaway is Browning might actually be okay, but his mental process has to be sped up so much more because it's just chaos in front of him. It's either that or he had a Nick Foles out-of-body experience where he became really good for like six games, you know, that kind of thing, and then went back to straight dog water, as the kids say, the following year. So I really like that call, Keith. That's a really low Jamar Chase number. He is still the best receiver in football. You will probably never get a number like that in Jamar Chase for as long as we live and walk this earth again. So I'm with that. And just to get back to the Detroit run game, I mean, God, two running backs on the same team who have odds to score two touchdowns that are plus 320 or better. I kind of like looking at those numbers. It's kind of an indicator of, you know, who Vegas thinks has a chance to go off. I kind of use that to correlate for DFS and things like that. Last Sunday, Genty was like plus 260 to score twice, right? We didn't see it at all this year. We knew the Bears were bad. But I looked at that number and I was like, that's a really low price on a guy who's just been getting hit in the backfield on half of his carries. It was ugly, but yesterday, Kyron, his odds were plus 265 on Wednesday on FanDuel. It actually went backwards to like plus 380 or plus 390 before kickoff. And I know they were kind of heavily favored. But, you know, for anybody to have two touchdown odds that are two times fewer than Christian McCaffrey, kind of says a lot. It was unorthodox, but Kyron got there. Now he's a pass catcher, I guess. But it was really interesting. So just the fact that Montgomery and Gibbs are, you know, about 3-1 or better to both score twice in the same football game has me thinking they might hang a 50 spot on Cincy on Sunday. Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, we did it. Let's go around the horn. Let's get everyone's best bet, and then we'll get you out of here. Let's start at the let's start with Bales. Bales, what do you like? What's your best bet of the week?
Yeah, I'm going right back to Daniel Jones over his passing and rushing yards is what I'm going with. I think as long as the game stays within reach for Las Vegas, they don't have anyone that's going to stop that offense. Daniel Jones will go off again.
Love it. Keith, what do you like?
Give me Garrett Wilson to torch the Cowboys over 62.5 receiving yards. Just elite target share, alpha in the offense, and has the absolute best possible matchup.
I'm going to jump in here. I forget who mentioned it earlier, but I love it now the more I think about it. The Kendre Miller over 30.5 rushing yards. Giants haven't stopped anybody. Miller's snap share going up, 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 up. I think I feel like that's probably 20 yards too low, that number. All right, Luch, I'll send it to you and you can get us out of here.
Just for value, I like the Mason Taylor touchdown. I think it was plus 370. I'm not sure what it is on other books, but an ungodly amount of zone coverage for Dallas, an ungodly amount of terrible zone coverage for Dallas, might I add. I think someone else might do a little bit damage too. So I like that number for Mason Taylor, who's been getting more involved. I guess that's it. Another show in the books. Again, all of our stuff on props is completely free. We have a ton of content. We have so many NFL articles. We have college football articles. NBA and NHL are right around the corner. By the way, MLB playoffs have been phenomenal, and we have four games tomorrow. So a little bit rooting interest, anybody? I know Keith is a Cubs fan. Jeff and Bells, who are your MLB teams?
We don't want to talk about that. I'm a Mets fan.
Same here. But, I mean, this is like – it wouldn't be – I feel like this is the best part about – Bells, where, did you grow up in the New York area?
I actually grew up right outside of Philly.
All right. So, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. And here, just for everyone who does not live in the tri-state area, when two people wearing Yankee caps cross paths, okay, they don't even acknowledge each other's existence. It's just like, yeah, all right, you know, like we're alive and we're human. When two guys wearing Mets caps cross paths, this is what happens. You're like, hey, you know, like it's like an Eeyore nod, like, yep. You know, like that's what being a Mets fan is. But it's good because Mets fans know what pain is. And we know what pain is. And so when pain comes to our personal lives, we're like, all right, yeah, but it's at least it's not as bad as the Mets. So yeah, Mets fan for life. That'll do it to you. I'm just glad we have a nice solid four game slate. That's a DFS. I'm playing some DFS baseball tomorrow, baby.
After that statement you made, you don't even want to know what baseball team I support. So anyway, nice talking to you guys. I'm the Loose Chat with Jeff Edelstein, Justin Bales, Keith Eyster. Check us out next Friday right here from 4 to 5 Eastern.
Do the Titans play baseball also?
We're fortunate that they don't. Good luck, everybody.